The Fugitive, Chapter 67. What evil have I done? Have I been mistaken in anything? Have I done something which causes your father to be angry with me? Why does he want to kill me? We hear David saying sadly. There stands the two faithful friends, David and Jonathan. After the Lord had protected David at Ramah, so that Saul could not harm him, David went to visit Jonathan. Probably Jonathan can help him. Jonathan tries to comfort him by saying, "Of course not, David. How could you think such a thing? My father does not want to kill you. If that were true, my father would have told me. He conceals nothing from me." But David shakes his head discouragingly. "Your father knows that we are friends," he counters. "Therefore, he does not speak to you about it. Really, Jonathan, there is but one step between me and death. I am not sure of my life for one moment." Jonathan understands that what David is saying possibly could be the truth. "Can I do anything for you?" he asks kindly. "Just tell me if I can." "Listen," says David. "Tomorrow it is feast day at your home. Ordinarily I too would come, but now I dare not. Do you think it will be all right if I do not come? I will go to my father at Bethlehem, for there it is feast also. If the king asks about me, tell him that I have gone to Bethlehem. If your father is agreeable and he doesn't get angry, then this will be a sign to me that he is no longer angry with me. But if he does get angry, it will be a sign to me that he still wants to kill me. Will you do that for me?" "All right," Jonathan answers, "I will do that." "But," David continues, "how will I know the king's reaction? I must know what the outcome will be." For a moment, Jonathan is silent. He is deep in thought. "Come," he suggests, "let us take a little walk through the field so we can talk more freely." When they come there, Jonathan stands still. "I promise you solemnly," he says, "that I will tell you everything my father answers. But you too must promise me something. Will you promise me that later, when you have become king, that you will neither kill me nor my children?" "Boys and girls, do you hear that Jonathan knows about David becoming king? I cannot tell you how he came to know about it. Probably David informed him of it. But it also could be that Jonathan can observe from all the circumstances that David will be the new king. However it may be, Jonathan knows David is to be the next king. Now it was often the case in earlier days, when a new king came to the throne, that he would wipe out the entire family of the former king. This was done for fear that the former royal family would rebel and drive the present king from the throne. You will hear more about those things later. For that reason, Jonathan requests this of David. "You need not be afraid, Jonathan. I will not harm your family later," is David's answer. "Perform an oath upon it. Swear to it," Jonathan requests. David swears an oath upon his promise to save Jonathan's family. These two thereby make a covenant with each other. "Now you must go," Jonathan says finally. "Come back after 3 days. Conceal yourself behind that large stone which lies on the side of the road. I will take my servant with me and will act as though I am hunting. I will shoot arrows for my servant to pick up. If I say to the lad, you have gone too far, the arrow lies this way, then you need not fear. But if I say to him, are not the arrows beyond thee? It is a sign that my father still seeks to kill you. They both agreed to do this. After this meeting, Jonathan goes back to the city, while David hastens to Bethlehem. A pleasant bustle prevails in the palace of the king. The room is full of people, and long tables are covered with food. When everyone has taken his place at the table, the meal is served. Saul is there with his family, his servants, and his friends. One place is vacant. It is David's place. The king sees this, but he thinks probably David could not come. He says nothing about his absence. When on the following day the place of David is again vacant, and does Saul ask, can anyone tell me why David has not come? No, he does not. Read what he does ask. Where is the son of Jesse? He says that deridingly, with a voice full of anger and contempt. Saul sits at this feast with an evil, angry heart. He had hoped that David also would be present, so he could kill him. That is why he asked where David was staying. I can tell you, father, a voice suddenly rings out. David has gone to Bethlehem, because they too are celebrating a feast. He asked me if he could go, and I consented. It is Jonathan who is speaking. A distressful silence follows. Every eye looks toward the king. They all frighten, for Saul becomes flushed with anger. He looks at his son with an angry look. How ridiculous of you, Jonathan, he snaps heatedly. Don't you understand that in this way you will never become my successor? As long as the son of Jesse is alive, you will never become king. Go get him immediately, for he shall surely die. But father, Jonathan cries out in anguish, why must David die? What did he do? With an insane sneer, Saul suddenly stands up, and then, he throws his spear at his own son, at Jonathan. Happily, his throw misses, and the deadly weapon whizzes past Jonathan. Do you see, children, that Saul is sometimes insane? No one with his right senses would do such a thing. Only a demented person would. It has become very quiet. At once all pleasantness has disappeared. Jonathan frightened. He also is angry, but he doesn't say a word. He understands that it is impossible to talk to his father about this matter. He gets up from the table and goes away. He doesn't want to remain. Now he knows that his father is firmly resolved to kill David. No doubt he could not sleep that night because of these thoughts. He is concerned about the fate of his faithful friend. Close to the village of Gibeah, where the king lives, lies a large stone, a boulder. A young man is hidden behind this stone, so that no one can see him. From time to time he lifts his head, looks searchingly around, and hides again. This young man is David. He had been to Bethlehem, and with them had eaten the yearly sacrifice which was offered there. But while the others were cheerful, a sad look lay upon his face. Troubled thoughts filled his mind. His thoughts wandered far away. What will be the outcome in the palace of the king? This is the question which is constantly with him. After the meal, he returned to the place where he had agreed to meet Jonathan, and now he waits impatiently for his friend to come. Finally, he sees two people coming in the distance. As these two men come closer, his heart begins to pound faster, for he recognizes them. One is Jonathan, and the other is a lad who is carrying Jonathan's bow and arrows. Suddenly, Jonathan stands still and says to the lad, "Walk on, so you can see where my arrows fall." The servant obeys. Jonathan then lifts his bow, places an arrow in it, and pulls. The arrow whizzes away in a large arc over the head of the waiting lad and falls somewhere in the grass. Jonathan cries, "The arrow is further. Run and look for it." The lad finds the arrow and brings it back to his master. He doesn't know why this is happening, but the waiting David understands it all too well. Saul, his father-in-law, still seeks to kill him. His life is in danger. Jonathan gives his bow and quiver to his servant and sends him home. He walks to the stone where he knows that David has hidden himself. When the lad, who may not know the meaning of this event, as that would be too dangerous, has disappeared from sight, David rises from his hiding place to meet his friend, bows before him, and they both burst into tears. It is not necessary to talk, because David has understood everything. He sobs out all his sorrow and misery. Jonathan also weeps. His heart is filled with compassion, and he can find no words to comfort poor, sorrowful David. At last he says, "Go in peace. Whatever happens, we will remain faithful to each other. You know what we have promised each other, don't you? Both of us will keep that oath." They part. With heavy steps, Jonathan goes back to the palace of his father. And where does David go? Yes, boys and girls, he doesn't know where to go. He is an outcast. He cannot return to his home or to Michal, his wife, because that would cost him his life. He must flee. But where must he go? An hour's walking distance to the south of Gibeah lies the village of Nob. After the destruction of Shiloh by the Philistines, the tabernacle was brought to Nob. Most likely the ark still stood in Kirjath-Jearim. In any event, the ark was not in the tabernacle. The high priest Ahimelech, a descendant of Eli, and the entire family of Eli live in Nob. One day, a young man approaches the tabernacle. Ahimelech sees him coming. At once, a look of bewilderment comes upon his face. He mumbles, "Why is he coming here?" He recognizes the man who is coming as David, the conqueror of Goliath, the son-in-law of the king. Ahimelech is fearful. has something serious happened. The high priest becomes nervous. Tremblingly, he goes to meet David and asks, "Why are you alone? Why is no one with you?" In those days, distinguished people never traveled alone. A few men always traveled with them. They would protect them against the many dangers which threatened them on the way. David immediately notices that Ahimelech is alarmed, so he tries to put him at ease. "I am on a secret mission for the king," he says. "No one may know about it. Therefore, I am alone." "That isn't true. It is a lie. David, you should be truthful, for the consequences of your lying will be dreadful." Ahimelech believes David. "I left so hastily," continues David, "that I didn't bring any food with me. Do you have a few loaves for me?"
"I have nothing," Ahimelech answers, "except the showbreads."
"You still remember, don't you, that each week 12 loaves of bread were placed in the tabernacle? These must be replaced regularly, isn't that right? The old loaves were taken away, and fresh loaves were laid in their place. The priests were the only ones who were permitted to eat these old showbreads." Ahimelech has nothing at this time except the old showbreads, which had just been removed. "Give me a few of those showbreads," says David. "I need them. I cannot travel without food, can I?"
"Good. This time I will give you a few," Ahimelech agrees.
When David had taken the loaves, he asks, "Do you have a spear or a sword for me? In my haste, I have forgotten my weapons."
"Yes. The sword of Goliath, whom you have slain, is here."
"Oh, give it to me," says David. "There is none better." Having received the sword, he leaves Nob and flees further. David is not at ease, for while he was at the tabernacle, he saw someone who made him frighten. The Edomite, Doeg, was there at the same time, and he saw David. He is a servant, a herdman of Saul, who takes care of the king's cattle. And now that David is fleeing further, David thinks, "I hope Doeg will not tell anyone that I was there." Well, there is nothing to do about it, and besides, David will be far away long before Saul will be able to look for him at Nob. He shakes his head. He also would like to shake those gloomy, unpleasant thoughts from him. Forward, do not think about them. We will go in our thoughts to the Philistine city of Gath. A stranger walks through the streets. The Philistines also see him walking. They stare at him and recognize him. They speak to each other about this stranger. Angry glances are cast at him. They clench their fists behind his back. Suddenly they move toward him and seize him. "Now we have you," their angry voices ring out. "Come along to our king." "Who is this stranger? Why are they so angry with him?" The stranger is David.
"David? What must he do in this hostile country?"
As you already know, he did not remain at Nob. As soon as he saw Doeg, David knew he was not safe in Nob.
"Do you know what?" he considered with himself. "I will go into the land of the Philistines. Saul will not look for me there. I will be safe there." He flees across the border and goes to Gath.
"David, did you ask the Lord for advice in this matter? Did you ask the Lord if he would keep you? Did you ask if you may go to Gath?"
No, he did not. He will try to deliver himself, but the Lord will show him he cannot deliver himself. So David flees to Gath with the sword of Goliath in his hand. Undoubtedly, he did not know that Gath was the birthplace of Goliath. Otherwise, he would not have gone there, that is sure. The inhabitants of Gath see him and recognize him. They also recognize the sword of their fellow townsman, Goliath. "This is David," they say. "He is our greatest enemy. He killed many of our soldiers." David notices that the people look at him. He hears what they say, and he begins to fear. He realizes he is in great danger. They will kill him. Probably he had tried to escape, but they seize him and bring him to Achish, their king. David is filled with terror. Now they will kill him. He still will be slain. While they are bringing him to Achish, David suddenly changes his behavior. His eyes have a strange appearance. They roll wildly through his head. His mouth opens, and he lets his spittle run down upon his beard. How filthy! Besides, he pulls wildly and roughly to get loose. When they approach a wall, he stands scratching the stones as a fool. This is how they drag him before the king of the Philistines. Achish loathes David. "Don't you see this man is raving mad? He is insane," he says to his servants. "This man will never harm us anymore. Let him go." Yes, now the Philistines see it too, and they let him go. Poor, poor David. Surely because of fright he became a lunatic, dribbling and scratching, and now and then laughing as a fool he stumbles through the streets. At last he comes to the gate, walks through it, walks stumblingly a little further, and suddenly the foolish expression disappears from his face. His eyes again sparkle with courage. Buoyantly he walks further. When he comes to a brook along the way, he washes and cleans his face and beard. He smiles subtly. But, how is that? He was insane, wasn't he? It seemed so, but it was only pretense. He only acted as if he were a lunatic, but really he was not. "Oh, David, David, you may not act in that manner. It is sinful." Boys and girls, never imitate afflicted people. That is evil and sinful. And even if David did do it at this time to save his life, it is and remains wrong. At last he reaches his own country, and there he thanked God for the deliverance from his great distress. He again stands upon the soil of his fatherland, but danger lurks everywhere. What now?